The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast, episode number 65. Hey guys, happy Monday. So I have a very special, cool episode to share with you guys this week. So this week I had Serena come on the podcast, and Serena is a stay-at-home mom of two boys. And after her son received a liver transplant at the age of 5 months old, Serena has been an active advocate for organ donation. She loves to share his story as a way to bring awareness to organ donation and to honor his selfless donor and their family. So after battling years of infertility due to PCOS, Serena and her husband welcomed their son Ezra into the world. Her birth was all natural and everything that she wanted it to be, but the bliss soon wore off as they started to notice that he started to get these weird red bumps all over his body. Their doctors warned that there could be some on his internal organs. So one day, after many, many ultrasounds, they found a bunch on his liver, which was super scary, obviously. And this was just the start of Ezra's whole story into getting his liver transplant. So without further ado, let's get into this week's episode all about Ezra.
You're listening to the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast, where we firmly believe in the power of education when it comes to giving birth. Tune in each week as we dive into pregnancy-related topics, expert interviews, and a variety of birth stories. As a reminder, anything you hear on this podcast is not medical advice. Please see mommylabornurse.com/disclaimer for more details. And now, here's your host, educator, registered nurse, and fellow mom, Liesl Teen.
Hi, Serena. Welcome to the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. I know we chatted a little bit on Instagram, but can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and your family, where you're from, what you like to do on weekends, all that good
stuff?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I am from Kansas. We have a family of four, my husband and I, and then my oldest son is Anthony, and he is 7 years old. And then my youngest son is Ezra, and he is one. He just turned one in September. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I get to do all of the fun things here around the house.
Hey, it's fun, but that is a full-time job. Oh, that's
it
for
is.
Sure.
Yes.
takes lots of thought and lots of work. Yes.
I
understand. All right. So today, guys, we were just chatting before the episode, and this is a little bit different kind of episode than what we're used to in terms of birth stories. Serena, if you want to start off with Ezra and his birth and how that went, and then we're actually going to talk more about the aftermath and kind of what happened after with Ezra. So if you want to start, maybe just, you know, a kind of synopsis of his birth, and then we can start talking about everything else.
Yes. So I had a pretty healthy pregnancy. I had PCOS, so it was a struggle trying to conceive. It took us about 3 years. So we were very, very excited once we found out that we were going to have little Ezra.
Yeah.
And so with my first, I had, I wasn't really educated on giving birth. I was like, okay, I'll just go to the hospital and I'll just give birth. The nurses will tell me what to do. It'll be easy peasy. Mm-hmm. I'll get the epidural. It'll all be good. And I realized it's not like that. I did not enjoy, I guess the way I went about it with my first. So, with my second, I was all about, educating myself. I went to, a class done by a doula here at our hospital.
Nice.
And I was able to, kind of have a better birth experience. I gave birth to Ezra, all natural on September 13th. And yeah, it was great. It was a really short birth. I was in labor for about 3 hours and I pushed for 10 minutes and he was here. So yeah, it was a very different story.
Yeah. Briefly tell me, since you use the word compare, so can you tell me a little bit about that first birth, like length, like time length, and
sure,
kind of what happened, just so you know, we can kind of see the comparison.
Yeah. Well, with my first, I was induced. I was 2 weeks over. And so I got the Pitocin, of course, and I was in labor for 16 hours, I believe. I got the epidural and my body just didn't react to it well. My blood pressure dropped and it just wasn't a good experience. And then, of course, with the Pitocin, that made contractions just awful. Yeah. So it was actually, you know, funny with my second, I was laboring at home for a long time because I was just like telling my husband, like, these aren't nearly as bad as I remember them. Mm-hmm. I can labor it out at home longer. And then by the time I got to the hospital, I was a 9. So yeah, so they were like, okay, it's time. So yeah, it was just a big difference in comparing the contraction, I think.
Yeah, that's a huge difference. Well, okay, let's transition now and talk more about Ezra. So something kind of significant happened right after he was born. So can you kind of transition there and what you kind of started to notice about him?
Sure. Of course, as soon as he was born, they placed him on me. And I noticed he had a lot of, they looked like freckles, like very faded freckles all over him. And so the nurses took him under the lamp just to get a better look. And they were definitely all very confused. They said that they looked like something called hemangiomas, which are like kind of like a little benign tumor made up of a bunch of blood vessels. And usually a baby can have a couple of them, but you just don't see them all over the body very often. So they were definitely kind of puzzled by it. And then the pediatrician came in not too long after and confirmed that he was pretty sure that they were the hemangiomas. And at this time, they did just look like very faded red freckles is all I could explain. Like you could barely notice it unless you were really looking.
Gotcha.
But I mean, they were all over his body. And so the pediatrician just kind of warned us that sometimes when a baby has, you know, more than like two, they can kind of present on the internal organs. So he wanted to get an ultrasound done the next day. And, you know, he kind of assured us that hemangiomas are fairly, just not something really to worry about typically. So we did that. He got an ultrasound done at barely 12 hours old. And they did find, quite a few on his liver. They checked his brain and his kidneys, you know, all of the big internal organs. And, you know, luckily they were just on his liver. So that's kind of how it went in the hospital as soon as he was born.
Okay. And was he showing any other signs and symptoms? Like, was he on oxygen or was he like, was there anything else like significant, or did he just kind of look like a normal baby and he just had these weird red bumps on him?
He was a bigger baby, so he was struggling with low blood sugars a little bit as well. Okay. But we were able to kind of manage that. He didn't need to go into the NICU or anything like that for those.
Gotcha.
But yeah, besides that, he just at that time he looked like a very normal baby. And so our next step was we got referred to our closest children's hospital. So I live in Kansas, and then the closest one to us is in Missouri, but it's only about an hour drive from us. And so we went there. I think he was 4 days old. I had just, we got discharged at 2 days old, and we went to the hospital. We met with a dermatologist for the hemangiomas, cardiologist, a surgeon, and the liver care center up there. It was a full day of scans and appointments and blood work. And at that age, you know, they're eating pretty constantly, but it's hard because we would have to not feed him so he could get the ultrasounds done. I think it was like 4 hours, had to fast for 4 hours.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was a struggle with a breastfeeding newborn who was nursing every 2 hours.
I was just going to ask if you went the breastfeeding route or if you just started to pump or if you were just like, I'm going to scrap this breastfeeding thing and we're just going to try and do formula or kind of your thoughts, you know, revolving that.
So I was pretty adamant about breastfeeding and kind of as we kind of get into his story more, he did end up having issues with his liver. And with children who have issues with their liver, it takes a lot of effort for them to gain weight. And so I would breastfeed and then I ended up pumping. That way we could fortify his breast milk with formula and kind of up those calories. But unfortunately, you know, I struggled a lot not being able to bring him, you know, to me to actually feed.
My
supply dropped a lot, but I kept pumping as long as I possibly could. I think I stopped at about 10 months when he was 10 months.
That's quite a long time.
A long time for just pumping.
for sure. Well, okay. So let's transition now. You are 4 days old. He's getting tests. So what happened after that?
So the liver care center, you know, at that time, his liver numbers weren't elevated really. And they kind of wanted to just take a wait and watch approach. And of course, we were okay with that. Now, the dermatologists were really concerned about the hemangiomas. At that time, it had only been a couple of days, and they were starting to get brighter red. And the unfortunate thing with hemangiomas, the thing that kind of makes them a little bit more scary, is they can kind of burst open. The bigger they get really puffy, and they burst, and it's, you know, not a good situation, painful, and can get infected. So they wanted to start him on a medication called propranolol. And that is actually, I think that's how you say it. It's a heart medication, but it actually works to help shrink these hemangiomas they found as well. So the liver care center and dermatology were kind of going back and forth on this, and they decided, you know, he was only a couple days old, let's wait a little bit before starting him on that. So we did. You know, we made sure that's why we went to the cardiologist to see if he it would be okay for him to start that medicine if he had to. And he's never had any heart issues, thank goodness. So that was okay. And so we would go back every week for labs and to meet with the liver care center. And I think it was when he was 3 weeks old, we went back and got his labs done. And his liver numbers were very elevated. And so they decided again to bring up the propranolol. And they said, well, let's try it and maybe it will also help shrink those hemangiomas on the liver. That's kind of what we thought was causing the liver to be so stressed out. And so we started that, and we had to be admitted for that just because they did want to watch for side effects. because I think it was like, you know, your blood sugars can drop, blood pressure can drop, that sort of thing. He tolerated it very, very well. The medicine helped his hemangiomas on his skin shrink. It felt like overnight, but it was over the next month or so. Almost all of them started to disappear, which were amazing because there were hundreds of them all over his body. And
yeah, I was just going to ask, because I'm looking at pictures of hemangiomas right now, and it looks like they are when a child has them, there's not a whole lot of them. It's like,
right.
It's like this big, you know, they have like a big collection of them. So you're saying he actually had them all over his body.
Yes, he had hundreds of them on the bottom of his feet, on his, you know, hands, his torso. The dermatology center said they'd never seen that in a baby.
That's crazy. And let me ask you this too. Did you have any idea before he was born that he had these? I mean, probably not, right? They can't see anything on ultrasound.
Correct. And, you know, I had a fairly healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
So we had the anatomy scan and that was it.
Yeah.
So we just didn't. Yeah. We had no idea.
Wow.
So he tolerated it very well. And his skin ones disappeared. Unfortunately, his liver ones, they shrunk, but not enough. And at that point, they weren't even sure it was the hemangiomas really causing all of the liver stress. And so we got admitted again. He was 2 months old at this time. And they completed a HIDA scan, which is when they inject like a fluid and they check bile flow through the liver. And they found that his bile was not flowing out of the liver the way it was supposed to. And at this point, you could see, you know, his hemangiomas were gone, but he was very, very yellow.
I was just going to ask. Yeah, usually those babies are even at two older. I mean, we probably... Most babies, not most moms, but a lot of babies have just the jaundice when they're born. So you can recognize like a yellow little tiny newborn. But yeah, I've seen a few cases of where they, you know, they're older and it's like a little jaundicey yellow baby.
They had, you know, he had like the golden tan skin and the yellow eyes. So we were pretty lucky. Because besides the yellow skin and, you know, the yellow eyes, he really wasn't having any pain. You know, his hemangiomas never burst. His liver never caused him any pain that we could tell of.
Yeah.
It was just the pokes every week. That was always hard getting labs done. That's like I was saying about breastfeeding and stuff, at that time he was really struggling with gaining weight. And so we talked about starting an NG tube, just to kind of help him put on that weight. But we decided not to at that time because he was gaining slowly. It was very slow, but he was gaining. And I felt like I knew at that time he was going to go through a lot and he was going to have a lot of pokes for a while. And I didn't feel like it was necessary at that point for the NG tube.
And that's fine. And that's fully within, you know, your rights and everything. I mean, I feel like a very informed, good decision on your part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I just kept breastfeeding and that was going as well as it could. And we had weight checks usually once a week here where we lived. We didn't have to travel for those. And like I said, he was doing very good. He really had no severe side effects of his liver failing quite yet, except for the color of the skin. And then when he was 3 months old, we had our first big scare with him. He had just woken up from a nap. And I went to go pick him up, and he was very, very sweaty, and he was so cold and lethargic. So we went to the emergency room, and his temperature was 91 degrees, and his blood sugars were at 19. Yes. So I think the typical blood sugar is 65 at that age. Yeah. So he was extremely low. I mean, they were amazed that he hadn't gone into a coma by the time
they got
there.
Yeah.
Yes, because he was very, very low. So as soon as we got to the ER and they saw his temperature, because I'd taken it at home, mm-hmm. and it kept coming up low, like 96 degrees, 95
degrees. Well, yeah. If you had like a normal, you know, thermometer, it doesn't even read that low.
Right. And I just kept thinking, there has to be something wrong with this. There's no way he's that cold.
Yeah.
And so, of course, as soon as we got to the ER, he got his sugar in the IV. Mm-hmm. As soon as we got there, he got the sugar gel in his mouth, and they put him under a heating lamp. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the scariest moments of our life. As soon as we heard those numbers, we were absolutely terrified, because he really hadn't scared us like that yet. Mm-hmm. And so we were there overnight, and they got his sugars back up. They got his temperature back up, and he was maintaining very well. So we talked to our liver care center, and, they kind of told us, you know, it could be such a wide range of things. It could be his liver failing even more, because your liver regulates your blood sugar and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It could be the medication he's on, that propranolol, that has that side effect sometimes, or it could just be a combination of both.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, and they halved his propranolol dosage in half. And so they told us, if it happened again, to go ahead and call them. And this time we'll go straight to the Children's Hospital rather than our local hospital. And so then 2 days later, it happened again. His blood sugars dropped to 39. We had like the little checker at our house. And so we immediately, they told us, the liver care center told us, if his blood sugars drop like that, give him frosting. So we had our tub of frosting for him in the fridge. And so we immediately gave him some frosting. My husband started the shower, and like heated up, turned the bathroom into a sauna.
Yeah.
As we're in there, we called the hospital, to make sure they had a room for us, 'cause we knew we would be staying overnight. And so that's what we did. We got him regulated again, and we went straight to the hospital. My other son, we dropped off at my grandparent, or at his grandparents, my parents. Mm-hmm. And we went to the hospital, and they again were able to get him back up, and they wanted to do something. I can't remember the official name, but they wanted to basically send him into a hypoglycemic episode, and do the critical care labs that they needed to do. They had to get him to go into another episode to get those labs to see what was causing this. So we waited, and, you know, we did the fasting and all sorts of things, but he never went into another episode while we were at the hospital, of course.
Of course, they do that, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So we were there for about 3 days, I believe.
Okay.
And his liver numbers were definitely getting worse. Yes. And he wasn't able to go into one of those episodes. And so at that point, they talked to us about a liver transplant. And they had actually just lost someone on their team. And so they didn't have a full transplant team at the time anymore. It happened like a week before they talked to us about this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they kind of gave us some options of other children's hospitals and hospitals to look at for transplant. And at this time, my husband had just started working for his company, and they, of course, he didn't have FMLA yet because he had just started. He didn't have, the time built up to help with all this, but he had the most amazing boss who let him work from the hospital. My husband works in IT, and, you know, who was just so kind and helped us be more flexible, because it was definitely very hard with, you know, Ezra in the hospital. By this time it was January, the very end of January, and it was flu season. And so, they only allowed one parent on the floor. And so my husband and my other son would stay at the Ronald McDonald House. And we just kind of switch on and off. And anyway, yeah. So it was a puzzle to try and figure out all of that.
And I was going to say it's right before COVID stuff too.
Yes. Yeah. And so we got referred to Omaha, which is in Nebraska.
Okay.
And that is where we went to get his transplant evaluation. And so let's see, I think it was February 11th. We went up to Omaha for what we thought was just going to be 2 days. We left my older son at home with my parents. We packed our bags, and, you know, we knew we were going to be in the hospital all day, but we're like, we'll try and have some fun. We'll go out to dinner, go to the mall again before COVID. So, life was a little bit more normal, and just kind of make the best of it. So we headed up there, and Omaha is about 3 hours from where we live. So it wasn't too bad of a drive, but it definitely wasn't close.
Yeah.
And when we got there, they did labs for him, and they told us that we could not leave. They told us that his numbers were dangerously high. His INR number, which kind of helps with like blood clotting, was very high, showing that he just wasn't clotting. And so they admitted us. He got a vitamin K shot to help with that, with his INR number. They finished doing his labs for his liver, and they found out that his bilirubin was at 30. Typically it's under one. So
yeah,
it was extremely high. Usually he maintained anywhere from like 12 to 15 was his typical bilirubin number. So it had more than doubled.
Yeah. And he wasn't showing any more like lethargic symptoms. And I mean, was his skin, it's just, he had like the skin issues and the yellow eyes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, dropping and having that medicine really helped a lot with making sure he didn't have those episodes again.
Yeah.
They told us, that we were just going to do the evaluation inpatient, and they kind of expedited everything. It was supposed to take 2 days, and it took, I don't know, maybe 2 hours to get it all done. You have to do the scans and meet with a psychologist to get evaluated and all sorts of things that you don't really even think of when you need a transplant. They told us that night that he was going to be listed the next day, and that he was going to be at the very top of the list. He was listed status 1A, and they let us know that it was very emergent, because my husband and I were, I think we were in denial. We were like, oh, no. You know, we are just coming here to get evaluated. We're supposed to be able to go back home and wait for a transplant there, you know, and I think we were just very caught off guard. We did not expect it to be like that, to be so rushed. And, you know, they they told us that he couldn't make it a couple more days without a liver at that point.
That is terrifying.
Yes. Yes, it was. And so, and also we didn't know this team, you know, we had a really strong relationship with our other liver care team. And now we have a new one that we just met that wants to, you know, put him, give him a transplant right away. And we, at that time, were just so shocked and scared. And we just hadn't developed that level of trust with them yet. Yeah. And it was very hard to accept, but we were like, okay, you know, as soon as they said this, as soon as they said that, we're like, okay, let's get him listed. So he was listed the next day, and we were lucky because that hospital also did living donation. Not every hospital has like a donation program. So they told us if we had anyone in our family that wanted to be considered, that we could give them their information. So we put it out, you know, we told our family, we put it on social media. It got shared by a nonprofit down there on their social media that he was looking for a donor. And my dad was the first in line to be worked up because he was the same blood type. Yes. But my dad is a very tall man. He is 6'4". And of course, at this time, Ezra just turned 5 months old the day he was listed.
Yeah.
So that didn't quite work out. So we put it back out there. I think the qualifications were they had to be under 50, same blood type or an O, certain BMI. They had to be under 5'5". Just like all of these super specific things because he was a baby. And so they needed someone
smaller. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of sense.
Yes. To me, I think, you know, with liver donation, they take a part of your liver.
Right.
I'm like, how could just a part of, you know, just a little, just take a smaller part then, you know? So, but of course, that's just the way our minds work when, you know, I don't have the medical experience. But yeah, so the next day they got his central line-in, and that was honestly such a godsend because he had been poked every day almost for his whole life. And
poor baby.
Yes. And the fact that they could now, you know, give him his IVs, give him his, you know, take blood from there and not have to poke him every time. Was just so amazing. And so that day went by and we didn't have a donor. There were hundreds of people calling in to get evaluated for living donation. We were so incredibly super blessed by all of our family and friends and people we didn't even know who were calling and trying to see if they would be a match for him. And then the day came, let's see, it was two days after he got listed. My husband, my husband had stayed the night at the hospital with him, and I came to kind of relieve him. At that time, they didn't have flu precautions at that hospital, so my other son could stay in the room with us. And so I sent my husband to the Ronald McDonald House to go sleep, and it was just me and the two boys in the hospital room, and a phone rang that was in the hospital room that I didn't even know existed. And I remember looking at it thinking, like, is the nurse supposed to get that? Like, do I answer that? But I went and I answered it, and they told us, you know, okay, we have a liver for him. And I just remember being so just shocked. Just, I honestly, it was hard to focus on anything else she was saying. Explained everything. And I was like, okay. And I hung up with her and I called my husband, and he was like, should I just come back over? And I was like, no, I think it's probably going to be a while. And so my family started to come up again. This was the middle of February, so right before COVID, and there wasn't restrictions. my parents, my couple of my aunts, Mark, my husband has a big family. So some of his siblings came up all to wait with us and, you know, keep our minds busy during surgery. Mm-hmm. And so we got the call at 11 a.m. that he was going to get a liver. And he didn't go into surgery until 9 a.m. the next day. And I remember I remember waiting because it's a lot of waiting in those hours. Everything seems to move so slow. And so many family and friends were reaching out and, you know, has it started? When's it going to get started? Blah, blah, blah. And I remember my husband and I at the end of the night were in the room with Ezra. My oldest was with my parents. And I remember feeling like it's okay. Like I didn't mind waiting because I knew that somewhere in the country, we don't know where they're from or we don't know who our donor family is. We do know that it was a baby, but somewhere there was a family who was getting their last moments with their child. Yeah. Who was, you know, saying all of their goodbyes and, you know, getting those last kisses and those last hugs and snuggles and moments. And I remember thinking and telling my husband, you know, these last moments that they are having with their child is going to give us so many first moments with ours.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's so hard to think about. And it's so sad, but it's such a selfless thing that so many people do. And it truly changes lives. You know, it truly is one of the most selfless gifts that you can give anyone. And I think it's even harder when it's you making the decision for your child. You know, when we sign up for organ donation, it's us, but to know that there was a family out there that had to make that choice about their child and decided that they wanted their child to go on and save other children is just, I mean, it's amazing.
And I think it's going to help if there's people listening who are on the other end. You know, I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this episode will it will resonate with them because maybe they have a similar situation as you, but maybe there are also people who are listening who have been in that situation and had a baby like that where they passed and they did organ, you know, donations afterwards. So I'm sure your story probably gives those people a lot of maybe peace is probably the right word, but just a lot of, you know, you don't hear, I'm sure you don't hear about that, you know?
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
The gratefulness. It's very, it's an overwhelming sense of gratefulness. And honestly, in our situation, it's almost like, and with a lot of other transplant recipient moms, like it's almost like you grieve with that family, you know, on holidays that baby and that family is one of the first things on my mind.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a very humbling thing.
Gosh.
Yes. So, yeah, he got his liver transplant at 9 a.m. that morning, and like I said, we had a packed waiting room. It definitely kept our minds busy. It was a 6-hour long surgery and it was so nice to just have all of our family there with us. And surgery went flawlessly. He did so good. Yes. And we went, of course he was in the ICU for afterwards. And he did so good in recovery. It's definitely a scary thing, something that I don't think we were prepared for those first few days post-transplant. You know, they're sedated the whole time and they have the ventilator and it is very a scary thing. And you never want to leave them, because sometimes he'd kind of open his eye and look over at you, and you just don't want to miss those moments almost.
I know. And they look so scary when they're hooked up to all those things too. They don't even look like your child. Yeah.
No, they don't. And he was so swollen, which is pretty common for transplant patients. So I think he went up like 2 diaper sizes in that time.
Oh.
Yes. But, you know, he ended up doing really amazingly. We got out of the PICU and went up to the general peds floor. We were there for about 3 weeks more. He did have a small bout of acute rejection.
Okay.
So what they do is they, you know, they take a little biopsy of the liver to confirm that's what it was. And, usually when it's caught so early, he was just given steroids, and that kind of helped, suppress his immune system a little bit more. He rocked it, and, you know, he had a little bit of roid rage, but it was okay. Yeah. Yes. Thank God we have not had another bout of rejection since then. He's 10 months post-transplant now. So yes, he has honestly rocked it so much. He is just such a healthy little boy now.
Good.
Yes, it was definitely scary, because as soon as he got discharged, it was mid-March, and in mid-March, that's when COVID hit. So
yeah, I was just going to ask, I want to like hear your thoughts on the whole COVID situation and having a child that's immunocompromised from having a transplant, and like just what comes with that, and your thought, and just everything in terms of that, because that's a lot.
Yes. So we don't even know what normal life looks like with an immunocompromised child.
Right.
And we got discharged, and we had to stay at the Ronald McDonald House. And we would have a nurse come and do labs from the house.
Okay.
And it was so scary, because, you know, the Ronald McDonald House is such an amazing house, but it is a communal living space, and it's scary to have to, you know, you keep hearing at this time, no one really knew much about COVID. Mm-hmm. You just knew you didn't want to get it.
Right.
And here I was with, you know, this immunocompromised child fresh out of transplant and living in a communal living space. And so we talked to his liver care team at the hospital, and they said, you know, he's doing great. Just go home and be safe and get labs done every week. So that is what we've been doing. We take all of the precautions so seriously.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, he goes once a week still. Actually now it's every other week, to get his labs done at the hospital. But besides that, he does not go anywhere in public. We go outside places and go on hikes and do fun stuff like that. You know, there are definitely some good creative options that I feel everyone has come up with to stay safe. We take his precautions very seriously. I told my husband, and I tell my family, you know, I've seen him on a ventilator and I don't ever intend to see him on one again.
No, please no. I think that's a good goal. Well, Serena, this was such an amazing story. I just have one last question. So you said if he's 10 months post, so how old is he now? Like a year and some change?
He is, 15 months.
Okay. Gotcha. So what is life like today? You said that you go once a week to the hospital to get his labs drawn, but is he on any medications, or is he, does he look and act like a normal kiddo or?
When he was originally discharged, he was on 15 medications. He's now dropped to 6 medications, which is awesome. One of those he will take for the rest of his life. That's the immunosuppressant.
Right. Right.
And, yeah, he acts like a normal 1 year old. He's our little wild child. He loves to be daring and do lots of naughty things he's not supposed to do. He is just so full of life and he's so sweet. If you don't see his scar on his belly, that you would never know of his story.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. He is absolutely amazing. So,
well, that is amazing. Thank you so much, Serena, for coming on and sharing Ezra's story. I think it's going to help a lot of people who are, you know, maybe in a similar situation, maybe not a liver situation, but having a child with medical issues, after, you know, a young baby right after they're born is something that I think a lot of people, you know, if you're going through that situation, you can resonate with this story. So thank you so, so much for coming on.
Yeah. I just wanted to share too, if you go on, I believe it's Donate Life America's website, you can sign up there to become an organ donor. There are currently 2,000 children that are on the transplant list. 25% of those are under five. And so yeah, there is such a huge need for organ transplant for people of all ages. You know, 18 people die on the transplant list waiting for a transplant every day. So I just hope that maybe this could inspire someone who's
Totally. I'm on there right now. I'm on their website right now. And we will leave that website in the show notes page too for anybody who is interested in going there and registering to be a donor. This is perfect. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Serena, again, for coming on.
Yes. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
All right. So that is it for this episode of the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast. You probably follow me on Instagram because that's probably where you came from. But if you don't, head over to Instagram and follow me at mommy.labornurse for more. That is certainly where I am most active. I also now have a separate Instagram for just this podcast, so I encourage you to follow my second account at mommylabornurse.podcast as well if you want podcast updates. Again, that is at mommylabornurse.podcast. As always, you guys know that I also have a website where I have tons of articles all about pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, newborn stuff, and more at www.mommylabornurse.com. I want to hear more from you on how much you love this episode of the podcast or how you think I can improve. So leave me a comment on one of my pictures, send me a DM, or send me an email with all the love. All right, guys, I will see you same time, same place next week.